the idea of great work, it was always built on expertise. You know, here's how to do something. But the how to do something today has been commoditized because you can Google search it. You can, you know, listen to a podcast. All of this is wonderful stuff, but it makes the knowledge of how to execute table stakes. And so instead of acting like an expert who kind of knows general rules, because again, commodities and instantly and ubiquitously accessible, instead of acting like an expert, we need to all act like investigators. And to your point there, investigators care about evidence, not absolutes. They care about what works in their situation, not what someone else says works in general. And they go about testing and learning and picking out clues from the world around them. They're experts, but in their own environment only. And so if we switch from having absolutes to having evidence, now I think we can succeed in an age that does not stop changing all around us.
So you're a smart business committed to innovation, to service, and to modern marketing. And you're asking, what's next? Wondering how you can become even more innovative. My name is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and this is the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Hi, innovators. It's great to be here again on another Model the Masters signature episode of the InnovaBuzz podcast. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I certainly have. In our Model the Masters signature series, we interview masters of a particular stage of the transformational marketing journey to enable us to model from what they do. I want to help us all create excellence in marketing and elevate our marketing beyond the noise of the ordinary by learning from masters of their craft. It's a great privilege to have as my guest today to explore the topic of gaining attention from your target market, Jay Akunzo of Unthinkable Media. Jay is an award-winning podcaster, a dynamic speaker, and has previously appeared on the InnovaBuzz podcast, episode 118. In today's episode, Jay told us about his values, integrity above results, serving the audience and giving them value, and having self-awareness and situational awareness, as well as curiosity, acting like an investigator, not an expert. He shared his belief that acquiring attention starts with an understanding of what problem you solve or what desire you fulfill for the other person, and that shortcut culture is a really bad thing. And his strategies that are based around the scientific method and on talking to the people he serves. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from today's master, Jay Akunzo.
Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Welcome to another Model the Masters episode of the InnovaBuzz podcast. In today's episode, I'm excited to welcome back to the podcast, the first time on Model the Masters, though, from New York in the USA, Jay Akunzo, who's the founder of Unthinkable Media. So welcome back to the podcast, Jay, and welcome to this Model the Masters episode.
It's great to be back. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, it's a privilege to have you. Now, you were recently on the InnovaBuzz podcast. You're founder of Unthinkable Media, and I'll let you tell us about that in a moment. On episode 118, in case people missed that, but I thought it would be great to get you back to explore today the topic of gaining attention from your target market and holding that attention, because I know that's something that's very important to you, and we talked quite a bit about the tactical aspects of that in the podcast. So before we get onto that, give us a short snapshot of your business and what you do and why you do it.
Sure. So I both consult on and create shows, podcast, video, you name it, but serialized or episodic content or assets for brands. And so my role is to make sure that, you know, companies that have been historically focused on acquiring people's attention through advertising interruptions, you know, seconds here and there, they need to master a new skill, which is to hold that attention, because that's where trust and loyalty and all these things that marketing teams talk about become a lot easier. So my role is to help them move with that time and not just acquire attention, but actually hold it, make sure all that hard work they do to acquire attention sticks. And so to do that, I'll work with companies that are looking to, you know, inspire people, spark a movement, rally an audience, not just care about traffic. And to do that, we build shows with them. Podcasts are a great way to do that as one example.
All right. Great introduction. So moving along then, now it's really great, the idea of holding that attention and building trust through holding the attention, because a lot of people in marketing talk very much about gaining attention and then kind of do a lot of automated follow-up. So I'm really keen to explore with you around that topic some more. Tackle this at the level of starting off with your values around that. So in terms of gaining attention from your target market and holding that attention, what are the values that are important to you? I mean, you mentioned trust just before. So
I have a set of values that are personal to me in my career. You know, I feel like integrity above results, not doing anything and justifying it because, oh, we need to hit a number, you know, actually serving the audience and giving them value, not just describing the value that we think my business provides or that clients provide. So, you know, content marketing being a one way to do that. But I think what you have to look at is, you know, you mentioned when it comes to acquiring attention, what are you looking at? How do you think about it? It has to start with understanding what problem you solve or what desire you fulfill for the other person. Without knowing that, you can't make an accurate decision on what tactic or channel or technology to use. And I think a lot of companies today, whether you're big or small, it's so tempting to jump on the latest trend or a convention that's worked for decades and just cling to that for dear life. But it all has to start with, what problem are we trying to solve in the market for our target audience, or what desire are we fulfilling for them? And then how do we go about articulating that? And there's infinite number of ways to do that, all of which must be tested, but it has to begin with that foundation.
That's a really important belief, I think, to emphasize. In terms, you mentioned integrity above results and you mentioned service and giving value. So what else is important, or can we dig down a little bit deeper on those?
Well, I just think there's too many people who are trying to game systems. There's too many marketers that are focused on short-term results or growth hacks or things, you know, the silver bullet mentality, shortcut culture is how I phrase it. It's rampant, not only in marketing, but in business overall, because you get articles written like how to drive X result in 30 days with no budget. And you get the proliferation of best practices and gurus and get there quick schemes, you know, and so in this world where best practices are pouring onto our heads in crazy amounts of volume, what we have to realize is all a best practice is something that works in general or something that works on average. Now, we don't operate in our businesses in a generality, nor do we want to be average. So these are really dangerous things to cling to and not think for yourself, right? We need to add in a little bit more investigation into our own teams and what we bring to the table that an expert can't take into account when they advise us. We need to investigate our customers and what they're actually like or going through. We need to investigate our resources and the constraints at hand in our specific company. So, you know, I think if you want to dig deeper on this idea of pushing past all these like growth hacks and all that stuff, it's all about starting with self and situational awareness. And then you can use that as a filter to say, what best practice out there works for me? Which ones do not, which ones are somewhere in the middle. But, you know, again, it begins with that. Just like it begins with understanding the problem you solve for customers, I think great work begins with understanding, who am I? Who are we? What is the context that I operate in? And you kind of have to get rid of all these generalities that bombard you every day first to think for yourself.
Yeah, I like that. Great work begins with a self-awareness and a situational awareness in terms of who your audience is, what their needs are, and how you can best help them.
Right. Because, you know, I could tell you today that I think podcasts are a great way to get in front of people, but also hold their attention and earn trust and loyalty. And I believe that. I've seen it in my work. I'm doing that with clients. But There will be large brands and small brands alike that win on print. There'll be others that aren't very digitally savvy whatsoever. You know, anytime someone says you have to do this or you must do that or the way to do something is this or just install that into your business. You know, I have a friend, Scott Stratton, who's a keynote speaker. He likes to say there is no just. There's no one thing. And so you now have all sorts of things that you can choose from. They're all possibilities, all these best practices and tactics. And it's up to us to vet those possibilities within our own unique situations. So it has to start with a mastery over your context first, and then retrofitting something else that you did in the past or an expert says you must do.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm hearing there that creativity and self actualization, is that accurate as a value? Because you know you are talking about there's a lot of things that work for a lot of people, doesn't mean they work for you. So
exactly. I think about the difference between glomming onto a trend or repeating what worked in the past and thinking for yourself. And I think if we want to do anything exceptional, so if we're talking about acquiring and holding attention, if we would like to do that better in our work, it can't start and then stop with taking what someone else did or what we did in the past and not thinking about it anymore at all. We have to think more critically. And I think, unfortunately, in our society, we've kind of radicalized the idea of what it is to think for yourself. Like we think about Steve Jobs, or we think about the rebel, the musician that bucks the trend, or, you know, an inspiring voice that moves us emotionally, or we think of a weirdo. You know, we've radicalized the notion of what it is to think for yourself. But I don't think there's anything radical about thinking for yourself. I think it's necessary, again, if we want to do anything better than average. And so, you know, what I aim to unpack with my podcasts, with my book, is exactly this. Like, what does it actually take to think for yourself, to break from conventional thinking and instead do something better?
Yeah, I love that. So are there any other values that are important to you around the building that attention, like gaining the attention, holding the attention, building the trust?
Yeah, I like to prioritize, and I push my clients to do the same thing, prioritize resonance over reach. And I think, so there, it seems like semantics, but I'm a believer in the power of words. And so when you look at resonance, that's like an emotionally charged reaction, and that can be from a few people. So in other words, if you're trying to grow an audience for your business that converts into lots and lots of customers, the temptation is to say, we're going to try three different things. And if none of them yield a big top line number, they're not worth doing. But what you should search for first is to get a small number of people who react in a big way to something you do. And ideally, those people don't know you, but it could just be a handful on social, over email, in person, that react with some kind of visceral response, because that's a sign that you're on the right path to solving their problems or fulfilling their desires. And then the reach part gets easier because you know you have something worth getting in front of more people. In other words, everything you're going to do is going to stick because you're onto whatever the it is that an audience wants. And you can do this in very easy ways. So if you're in my world, you're going to create a podcast, that's a big asset. Why not send out a bunch of tweets for free in very little time that share strong opinions or a question to the audience? And if you get no response at all, you now have to make a decision. Did I phrase it wrong? Is this not actually what they're interested in? But if you get a visceral response, if you hit on resonance, now it's like, okay, how else can I take this topic or idea and get in front of more people and reach more people? I'll write a blog post. If the blog post hits, I'll create an episode or a whole show around that theme. And so I think we have to get away from this obsession over reach and start with resonance first, because then the reach stuff gets easier.
That's great advice. So it's about testing what works in a small environment and then putting the effort into scale up what actually is giving results in the sense of getting a reaction and getting that attention.
I think you nailed it. And I think what you're onto there is the switch we're making in the digital age to do this work well, which is, you know, it used to be that, or maybe we even felt this in our own careers or when we emerged from school and got jobs for the first time. But the idea of great work, it was always built on expertise. You know, here's how to do something. But the how to do something today has been commoditized. because you can Google search it. You can, you know, listen to a podcast. All of this is wonderful stuff, but it makes the knowledge of how to execute table stakes. And so instead of acting like an expert who kind of knows general rules, because again, commodities and instantly and ubiquitously accessible, instead of acting like an expert, we need to all act like investigators. And to your point there, investigators care about evidence, not absolutes. They care about what works in their situation, not what someone else says works in general. And they go about testing and learning and picking out clues from the world around them. They're experts, but in their own environment only. And so if we switch from having absolutes to having evidence, now I think we can succeed in an age that does not stop changing all around us.
Yeah, yeah, that's really well put. And I've noted down the curiosity and investigation there, because I think they're probably key values in how you do the attention building and attention holding in your particular unique way.
Totally. You know, like, let's say I knew for my podcasting business that, well, I do know podcasts are very important to a lot of brands, and I've started to look at why. And so I, you know, if I'm like, I'm going to write a blog post about why podcasts matter and nobody cares about it and no one shares it or reads it or responds to it, I should re-engineer or reinvestigate what I think the real reason is that people care about podcasts, because the market is telling me, no, you're not on the right path, or maybe you're on the right path, but the way you phrased it was over my head or I didn't get it. And so, you know, taking that idea with me can inform my entire business now, because I'm looking at that resonance first. And now I'm trying to lean in harder. I'm trying to put it in more places or go deeper and explore it through more content or in my sales pitches or what have you, in, you know, in the book. So it's so interesting to me that we are so obsessed with the bigness that we see other people or companies reaching. But what we fail to realize is to get there, you need that strong foundation. And it's never been easier than right now to like test your way there. So, you know, if I'm saying to another podcast business, how do you reach people? How do you acquire attention? I actually don't know. So I would say start with trying to find something that seems to resonate, and then everything else becomes a test. You know, what channels, what times of day are you posting to those channels? What, how are you phrasing or packaging the message that you've seen resonate with people online or off? Like everything else then becomes the scientific method of, you have a hypothesis and you want to test it rapidly, drop things that aren't resonating or working, and investigate further the ones that seem to stick. You know, that is the scientific method. I think that is how you do marketing, sales, customer support, all of it today.
Hmm. All right. Well, I think that kind of moves us on a little bit to the strategic level. So the scientific level is very important there, and running the tests. So how do you get started? What's the first step in doing something like that you've just described?
Talk to customers. Talk to the people you aim to serve. It's funny. I talked about, you know, resonance, but resonance is really just you reflecting back something that you're saying to them. I understand you. I understand exactly what you're going for. And so I'll give you an example of a company that did this really well, which is Envision, which is a software company that sells tools for product designers. So if you're designing a mobile app for a living, for example, you might use their tools to prototype the design of a new page in the mobile app and then collaborate with your team on that design. So that's Envision's product, and that's their place in the market. They serve product designers. A few years ago, they were busy creating case studies, just like a lot of their competitors. And one of their marketers named Claire Bird, she noticed that a lot of these people were just responding very, very viscerally, very defensively when she'd ask them a very casual question. Hey, what's the value of product design to business? And the more she dug into that reaction and talked to her customers, the more she realized they felt undervalued or they felt misunderstood in the business world. So they got defensive when she asked about that stuff. And she realized that, yes, eventually these companies need to bring in product designers and then tools for those designers. But really, product design as a function, as a profession, needed an identity in the business world. And so that realization is a good example of what I'd call a first principle insight about your audience, which is when you cut through all the conventional wisdom and you reach this like basic but hard to reach truth about your audience's struggles or desires. So product designers for Envision were their audience, but instead of doing more case studies about the tools they sold, they actually created a documentary film called Design Disruptors, which spoke to some of the biggest companies in software today about how product design was moving their businesses forward. And in doing so, they built a community and gave that community and identity because it was right there in the documentary. And they doubled their users as a company within 1 year, and they've raised something like $155 million US, which is they're the most well-capitalized competitor in their field. So that's what I talk about when I talk about talking to your audience. It's not just a chit chat. It's not like a veiled pitch. It's trying to figure out what is it that they're actually dealing with that maybe we can't find unless we talk to them face to face about their own reality.
That's such a great story. And yeah, your strategy there is, you summed it up really well there at the end. And it's getting to the deeper need or want or frustration of the customer, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's the first principle. So that in physics, they have this idea of first principles. You know, most people reason through analogy where it's like, okay, this is how this kind of business or this kind of tactic generally goes, you know, back to the idea of best practices and generalities. But when you have a first principle, you can start to build up your own logic, and it doesn't matter what the convention is. So in the case of Claire Bird and Envision, you know, they created a documentary film, which seems nuts if you set out to create case studies until you understand that first principle like they did, because now they're thinking logically. They're like, well, the first principle here is that product design lacks an identity. And that matters to us because if it doesn't have an identity, people in business don't understand the value. And if they don't understand the value, they're not going to have budget for product design. And we need them to have budget for product design to sell our tools, right? Now you reach that like actual thing that most marketers focus on, but most marketers are focused on that last mile. Instead, Envision started the race and ran the whole damn thing with their audience. And it's because they had that first principle insight.
Yeah, it really is a great story. I love it. All right. So, and then the next step, once you have that insight, your next suggested step is around the scientific method that you described. So going forward from there, how do you know when it's working? You touched on a little bit earlier, but can you talk to us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I worked under a great venture capitalist at a firm called NextView, which is located in New York and Boston for about 3 years. I ran their brand. And one of the founders, Lee Hauer, was on the early founding teams for both PayPal and LinkedIn. So he's seen a thing or two when it comes to entrepreneurship and successful businesses and growth. And he had this phrase that stuck with me, which was the idea that, you know, we think we have to convince other people, whether we're doing marketing or sales or in Lee's world, you're an entrepreneur raising venture capital. But Lee's take is it's actually a search for true believers to, you know, you want to inspire those true believers. And so once you have a first principle insight about your audience, now it's about finding those true believers. And so, you know, back to the Envision case, she almost found them in her journey to the insight. Because she was talking to her customers face to face, and she could say to them, you seem very defensive. I almost wonder if product design could use an identity. And if they lit up and said, oh my gosh, you're right. Those are some early true believers. And she could say, okay, I'll come back to you with an idea, whether the idea was the video in full or, hey, I'd like you to be featured in this video. So when you have a first principle insight, you can start to inject it and inform all your work with it. And then what you want to see is not the final success. It's just seeing if you're on the right path with that insight. You know, I use the example of tweets, which are very easy tests. Like if I'm going to create a new podcast series for a client, we're going to fire out a bunch of tweets based on the insight we think we have and then see the response. And okay, those are the early true believers. And we want to build the business or build the show in this case on the back of those true believers. You know, and I think this is what happens when you have a first principle insight. You're going to take a path that's different than everybody else. So you can't rely on an expert or a case study or a precedent to inform your steps because you're doing something new. So you have to rely on the kind of response of your audience to let you know, hey, yes, this is the right path. Please continue to come this way. So those true believers come next after the insight. It's not final success, but it's a sign you're on the right path towards it.
Yeah. And how do you continually monitor then once you've got something up and running, how do you continually monitor that you are, you know, holding that attention and you are resonating with the audience?
I think this is where the muscle memory of a lot of organizations kicks in really nicely because we're so used to trying to market to people in more traditional ways. You know, we're so used to, okay, I'm going to spray my message on every social network, or I'm going to buy a bunch of ads and jump out in front of people, or whatever tactic you have at your disposal in the past, that has either proven itself to be useful or just seems to be common in your industry, those can still be useful if you re-engineer what you're putting through those channels or tactics based on that first principle insight. So in other words, if you're Claire and Envision, go ahead and create those case studies, but maybe start with this idea that, hey, we understand the value of product design here. Let me show you. And you cut to somebody who's explaining the identity of product design and then ask them about the product, right? So all these things that we're already doing, they're just better informed now once we have the insight and then accurately test it. And so I don't think we have to, you know, reinvent the wheel here. I think it fits in quite nicely to everything we're doing. And everything we're doing, you know, again, should be a test. I'm not saying get religion around, I have an insight, I've tested it, and now I'm going to continue to run forever with that one tactic. That's not what I'm saying. But I am saying don't throw out everything you're doing. Just revisit those using the new information you have.
Yeah. So basically use the insights and information and pick the appropriate tools that are conventional tools that then have their own sets of measures and so on where you can track how things are performing.
Exactly right. I have a newsletter I send out every Monday morning and it's called Damn the Best Practices. But it started as just an alert system. I would just send out a newsletter basically saying, hey, I published a podcast episode. Here it is. Or maybe I take a few lessons out of it. And then progressively, I started to just tinker on, you know, why are people listening to my personal show, which is called Unthinkable? Like, why are people listening to Unthinkable? And I started talking to my listeners using one-on-one video chat technology. I probably did 5 or 6 a month for 3 months. And the calls themselves don't really scale, but the lessons I learned within the calls scale beautifully because I then revisited the newsletter and I started to write stories that were inspired by the episode. And I found that people were clicking more frequently on the episode links. They were opening the emails more and the email list started to grow faster. And I kept with the same tactic, but I informed it better based on the insights I'd gotten from talking to customers, in my case, listeners.
All right. Well, that's fabulous. I think we've probably covered the strategy in a good high level pass and got a lot of information there. I'd like to move on to our exceptions round. So this is 3 questions that are essentially designed to give people a snapshot of what we've already talked about around the idea of gaining attention from your target market and keeping and holding that attention. And the first one is, what behavior do you do to be great at gaining attention and holding attention from your target market? And, you know, you've talked quite a bit about this, you know, something that you do that's different to anyone else.
I think there's 2 questions you should ask yourself to answer this, and I can't answer it for you because everybody's context is different and you need to respect that. The first question is, do you fully understand and own the problem? In other words, I think product marketers and software are brilliant at this. I worked for Google and all these product marketers were like the kings and queens of each product that everybody admired because they didn't necessarily own the product and the features and the solution. They owned the problem in the market for the customer. They needed to deeply and intimately understand all the details of what people were going through, what existing systems that they try to use to solve those problems. They owned the problem. So do you fully own and understand the problem? That's one. I think we're so enamored with our own solutions to a problem that we get too caught up in that. Yeah. So that's one question I'd ask you is, do you own the problem? Have you taken the time to understand it? Mm. And then secondly, and this is more about messaging or delivery or differentiation in the market, but where are you willing to go that your competitors are not? So for me in my work, I host a show about business and maybe to a lesser extent, creativity. I'm telling stories of innovation. There's so many shows that talk to experts and talk to people who do that. Where I'm willing to go is I'm willing to get very emotional using a lot of post-production and techniques pulled from entertainment media. And a lot of people in business aren't willing to go there. They're not willing to lay out their heart and they're not willing to kind of rally people because they're just focused on the smarts. Whereas I'm focused on being entertaining and smart. And so that's something I learned through self-awareness and developing it over years and years. So where are you willing to go that others are not? That's the second question I'd encourage more people to think about.
That's really insightful. And it speaks to, you know, what's your unique gift and what's your unique personality and how can you bring that to bear in a way that actually addresses your audience's problem.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with the word refreshing. Everybody talks about being different, but you can manufacture different, right? You can. It doesn't have to be authentic. It's just, you know, and also who cares if you're different? Yeah. The theory is that if you're going to be different, that's better than claiming you're better because you stand out, because you find a niche that you can own. I get why people say different is better than better. I think refreshing is best of all, because while different refers to different from whom, your competitors, refreshing refers to the reaction that your customers or your audience has to you, which you can't game. In other words, you're focused on the right things, your customers, if you focus on trying to be refreshing. And so discovering how you can be that is incredibly important. And if you end up being different than others, great. I think it's a byproduct of first being refreshing.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. And it comes back to the what you talked about earlier about resonance being more important than reach. So actually getting a response from your audience because they feel as though you do have that understanding of their problem and you are on their side.
Exactly right.
All right. So what are your top three beliefs for excelling at gaining that attention and holding that attention?
Put integrity over manufacturing results. In other words, the right thing is always the right thing to do. And we kind of know that in our guts, I think, or we would do it as a consumer and think about it. But then for some reason, we put on a business hat and we start to throw out our own integrity or our sensibilities. Don't throw that stuff out. Hmm. Maintain it, hone it, you know, understand that doing the right thing is always the best path forward. So integrity over results, and it tends to get better results. You might also say learning over results. That also gets better results. The second is resonance over reach. So finding and identifying what sticks, what people respond to viscerally, and then leaning in harder to that test, that channel, that message, whatever it is, that tends to get you reach a lot easier, or it tends to get you more conversions because, again, you found something worth marketing, you found something worth saying. So resonance over reach. And then, you know, I think, quite frankly, the big roll-up of all the things we've been talking about is don't focus on best practices, focus on what works best for you. And to do that, it's about like questioning conventional thinking to think for yourself.
Hmm. That's great advice. Love those. And it is a recap of what we've talked about already. So that's consistent. All right. The third one is, what is the key difference that you think makes the difference in your exceptional approach to gaining attention and holding attention?
You're asking about my work in particular or in general?
Yeah, your work in particular.
That's I think it is that idea that, you know, what I founded Unthinkable Media on one belief, which is that content about work should reflect how we actually experience work, which is all the emotions in the human spectrum. I mean, we talk about it with seriousness. We get sad about work. We get mad at work. We are happy with it. We are, you know, strategic about it, silly about it. Everything about the human experience is rolled up and applied to work. It's so meaningful to do great work. And yet the content we consume about work does not reflect that. It's boring or commodity or dry or even the smartest of the smart. It's like cramming a textbook into your ear if it's a podcast, or eyeballs if it's a video or what have you. And so I think what I'm after, again, is this idea of being refreshing. And to me right now, if I'm going to create great shows with B2B brands or great shows that I just think should exist myself, I'm going to lean into the idea of being entertaining and smart, because I want to hold your attention. I want to create something that you'd willingly consume, you know, in your not just 9 to 5, but the 5 to 9s at the beginning and end of your day. And I don't think most people are thinking about that. So I think to answer your question directly, I'm willing to go farther into entertainment and try to do the delicate balancing act of not getting kitsch, but using entertainment tropes and techniques tactfully to make something smart irresistible.
Hmm. Okay. And I think, you know, there's a clear message in there in terms of what you've said about refreshing and entertaining that is really key in holding that attention. And as you point out, the range of emotions that we go through in work are all the human emotions, and we kind of filter those all out when we present some content and make it all very... boring sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's just sort of saying what's on everybody's mind and nobody's willing to say it and just sort of pointing it out. Like if something is terrible and frustrating and sucks, it's sort of like throwing your hands up and saying, this sucks. Why don't we recognize this is terrible?
Yeah.
You know, like a really specific example is as a professional speaker, I probably do about 25 to 30 speeches a year and I often moderate panels. And it's just saying to the audience, hey, you know what usually sucks? Panels. You know what's not going to suck? This panel. And here's why. You know, because people they're smart. They get it. Most people in a panel just yes everybody else that went before them to death and add their little spin on the same take. And so, you know, respecting who you're trying to reach and calling out things that are terrible and elevating things that are great. But yeah, it's just being willing to say things that are on people's minds, right down to the fact that I spent a lot of time and attention and a lot of thought trying to convince other people to basically, you know, achieve one thing, which, you know, I'm basically saying to the world, hey, you know that thing you're making? You should make it good.
Mm. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Jay. This has been really great. I've got a lot of notes here that I think we can turn into something really valuable for our audience and entertaining as well. I think that, you know, in terms of analyzing your values and beliefs and strategies will hopefully give people a framework that they can then look at and say, well, what can I learn from that and how can I apply this to my unique situation and my customers' problems? So that's the objective here. So where can people reach out and say thank you?
I'm all over the internet, but I think the best place to find me is probably best place to communicate and chat with me is on Twitter. But if you go to my website, unthinkablemedia.com, you can find all of my shows, the newsletter, everything we talked about, a lot of the thinking kind of distilled into either resources or blog posts and eventually this fall, the book.
Mm, yeah. And there's some great information on all those links. We'll have them in the show notes this time, but also in episode 118, where we had you on the InnovaBus podcast before, all of that's there. So there's a lot of great information on your websites and everything that I encourage people to go and have a look at. Now, finally, who is someone you consider as a model, as your model for gaining attention from the target market and holding that attention?
Oh, I've always been into Anthony Bourdain and his work as a travel TV show host and former chef and current author. I think he's an example of what I'm trying to do in the workplace. He's doing it in food and travel and culture, which is pulling out meaningful stories from people's seemingly mundane day-to-day. I love the Netflix series right now, Chef's Table. I learn a lot from that. You know, I'm a huge consumer of all things sports, and I pull a lot from the site TheRinger.com and their CEO, Bill Simmons. So I'm way outside the echo chamber with things that I try to model my work off after, because it's the stuff that, again, it's holding my attention. And so I'm often going to weird and potentially wonderful places to find that inspiration.
Yeah. All right. Well, we might get you to introduce us to Anthony. Maybe we'll have a chat to him as well.
Oh, he's a giant celebrity. If I could reach him someday, I'd love to. Yeah, good luck. I'd love to reach him, but I don't think I'll get that guy on the show.
We might just link to some of his shows and things. I thought you might know him personally. So we'll link to some of his shows so people can go take a look at how he gets attention and how he holds attention and how he's entertaining. So, yeah. All right. Thanks for that. And thanks so much for sharing your time with us again and your insights so generously today. This has been really fabulous. I've enjoyed it. Hope the audience enjoys it as well and learns from it. So all the best for the future and for the launch of the book coming out, and let's keep in touch.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this Model the Master signature episode and learned from Jay's values, beliefs, and strategies. A summary of all that Jay shared with us can be found at modelthemasters.co/Jay Acunzo. That is JayAcunzo. All lowercase or one word, modelthemasters.co/Jay Acunzo. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Jay there. Jay nominated Bill Simmons of TheRinger.com as someone that he admires for gaining attention from his target market. So we'll reach out to you, Bill, to get you on a future Model the Masters episode. Stay connected. head on over to iTunes or Stitcher or Pocket Casts and subscribe to the InnovaBuzz podcast so you make sure you'll never miss another episode. We'd also love you to leave us a review because what you think matters. Take some of the ideas you've heard today and apply them in your business. Any thoughts, ideas, suggestions, or questions, share them in the comments below the blog post. And remember, if you want to get better marketing results than you ever have, join our fantastic LinkedIn community at the Transformational Marketing Academy. All you have to do is go to innovabiz.co/TMAC. It's free to join. Hope to see you there soon. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.